Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about yet another new way to pay from Amazon. Hint, you won't be giving them the finger. And some new developments coming out of Japan and why we don't really hear too much from them on FinTech. And a few key elements that we're going to expect to see in FinTech over the next decade. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get started. With me this week is Steve.
Hello, John. Good to be here.
Yeah, glad you're here to take on all the stuff that's going on. It's barely, the third week of January into 2020?
And the world is burning. We have Australian fires. We have a potential pandemic in China. The impeachment trial. Oh, my God. Is it ever going to end?
Yeah, I just saw the Microsoft had some massive breach.
I saw that as well.
25 million?
Yeah.
Records. At least there were customer support records. There wasn't date of birth, social security. So if you wanted to keep your technical problems secret, they're out there on the dark web. I forgot. I just need to hit the escape key.
Right.
Well, more serious than that. But yeah, cybersecurity, it never ends. Watch out.
Never ends.
All right. So Amazon, as usual, along with everything else, has a new way to pay?
They do, yeah. This has come out of the Wall Street Journal maybe earlier this week, but essentially they were granted a patent to create a way for you to pay with your hand so that you can just wave at a magic machine and boom, you can just walk out of the store with your purchase. It's amazing.
Wait, how do you pay? Just pay with your hand then? How does it work?
So the way the process works is that you will show up at a point of sale, say a coffee shop, a grocery, or even in some cases, I'm assuming an Amazon Go store, and the clerk or whoever the machine will prompt you to maybe store your palm print with the POS device, the point of sale device, and then that'll be linked to your credit card. Then the next time you go to that same store or that same point of sale, instead of just taking out your card, a very long process of taking out your card, putting it into the machine,
so troublesome.
Putting it to pay, maybe right now you can just wave.
Can you imagine
hand.
Standing behind someone writing a check now?
Oh my God, murder, absolute murder, not gonna happen. But yeah, I think that Amazon is looking for a way for us to shorten that cycle, maybe from 10 seconds to maybe 4 or so. Now you just wave your hand and magically you can just leave with your stuff because they have your fingerprint on file.
Is it just your fingerprints or is it the blood flowing back and forth in your veins?
I have seen companies that claim to be able to measure the veins in your hand.
And right.
It's because you all have
seen something like that. Maybe in a Mission Impossible movie or something.
I've seen it in real life, not in a Mission Impossible movie.
They have the gait analysis where you the way you walk will be your... You can just walk out and then they'll charge you.
I this is all part of the whole biometric scheme. So I know of companies that now allow you to pay with your eyes, so they can basically scan your eyes, your retinas. And that's because you all have a very different eye architecture, I guess. We can be identified with high confidence based on just your eyes.
I saw Minority Report. Watching sci-fi movies is very helpful for this.
It's
article.
Very good for fintech of all things, right? So yeah.
But can you imagine if you get a cyber breach on all the gait analysis? Hey, that guy stole my walk.
That guy.
You better stop walking like me.
That guy has a limp and is hunched over just like me.
That
wouldn't be good. But this is kind of a really interesting way for them to get into the payment space more deeply. So they're of course immersed with, you can do things like in India, you can pay for your phone bill with Alexa, but now this is at a physical payment transaction. How can you just make it as seamless and
so
as frictionless as possible?
So the store has to... install a little hand scanner thing.
It's basically the POS, the same way in which some stores have, say, a Clover system or Square or something. It's the same concept. It's
or like that barcode device. Scanner, you just put your hand.
It's all that, but I think this is different from, we've actually seen deployments of hand or pay by hand technology at school. So kids can just put their hand on them and pay for their lunch with their hands.
Oh, really? This, some schools have this?
Yeah, that's actually been deployed.
But not on Amazon.
Not on Amazon, no. So it's not new technology. This is just paying for stuff with just waving of the hand.
Can you imagine some bully dragging some kid's hand up to pay?
Pay for my chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Put your hand on there, Timmy.
He stole my lunch.
He stole my palm print.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is really cool. And it's interesting because from a fintech perspective, they're actually not looking to bypass the banks or the credit card rails. They're working with a credit card company. So
yeah.
it's a way for them to
it's
store
It's just like the end file. Point.
It's just the end point.
Security yeah. end point.
Yeah, yeah. So we have moved from basically, you know, from swiping your card maybe 5 years ago to now chip and pin. And now maybe at some point, just the wave of your hand. The future is here, John.
Yeah. Hey, Grandpa, he has to take out his plastic. What's up with that?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Look at that guy. Is that guy paying with a check? Unbelievable. Yeah.
Why doesn't he just bring a bag of gold next time? The TSA, I heard, is looking at foot payment technology.
Oh, is
you
that
You take
so?
Off your shoe at the airport, and then you can pay.
Just step on this pad. Pay for what? Yeah. For clear or something?
You know, you'll need some kind of a payment system for those expensive airport stores.
You do. Have you ever bought an apple at an airport? It's like $5. Or like a bottle of water, it's like $17.
That's the minimum price for something is $4. Yeah.
Although at some airports, they actually don't do that. Some airports have a rule where the prices inside the airport cannot be higher
than
outside.
That must be a new rule.
No. If you're going to PDX, shout out to Portland here, their airport inside, the food is priced as if it would be in the city
itself.
That
must be the only airport that has this rule.
There's a few other, mostly smaller airports. But actually, a lot of the airport revenue, I don't know how I know this, but maybe 20% of an airport's revenue come from concessions inside, and that's based on the markup they have.
That's good to know.
Random fact of the day. Yeah.
So I saw something really interesting that I was really surprised, actually, that you know, a country that you think of as very high-tech, very advanced, busy place that's always coming up with new ideas, but maybe not so much lately, is Japan.
That is so interesting. Yeah, it seems like they are sort of really good at process innovation and at creating hardware and other consumer products, but not so much in the financial or fintech space, right?
Yeah. That's what really struck me about this article is that I hadn't thought about that before. But they have an interesting graph that shows the fintech adoption rates in various countries.
Oh, fascinating.
Of course, China is at the top. This is a percent of people who are digitally active. Mm-hmm. And so China has the highest percent. It doesn't give the exact number. It looks like 60-some percent. India is very close by. You know, a lot of mobile
also
adoption.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Kind of skipped the whole banking sector directly. Russia's number three.
That seems very odd to me. I don't know why. It seems like they're not. I don't think of Russia as
maybe
like this massive tech hub.
Maybe people don't feel confident with the
banking
system, or
my
or with all the you know, with all the sanctions and stuff. Maybe they have to go around and use some alternative providers. I'm not sure. And South Africa is number
that
four.
That also makes
actually.
Sense. Yeah, you have M-Pesa and other things. I think that there's kind of a correlation.
Or some
here.
Fintechs that are
some
out
fintechs,
of there.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is basically countries that bypass the whole landline ATM machines all over the
right,
place kind of thing,
right.
kind of go to the mobile thing, so they
tend
kind of
be
tend
higher.
To adopt mobile payments a lot faster than others. But Japan makes sense to me because they also, I was in Japan last summer, and they definitely were. It's a very cash heavy economy. It seems like you can't use your card everywhere you go, which is interesting. And it's also a country that is so technologically advanced that maybe they don't have a need for all these convenient new ways to do things.
Yeah, like, kind of like the opposite effect of the people who bypass. They have established traditional systems that they're comfortable with.
There are
one of the.
Work, yeah.
I think they're the country with the highest use of fax machines still in the world.
Oh, my God.
They're really attached to their fax machines.
I'm not surprised by that.
It's a big thing. You know, I've seen stories where some lunch places just get fax after fax of lunch orders with the menu marked off and all that.
Have you heard of Seamless?
Yeah, you're right. They try to switch them over. They try to switch their customers to online, and they lose all their business because the people are so used to getting their fax machines. So these restaurants have to buy all this paper, you know, constantly refill the machines and all that. So
gigantic waste.
So one of the ways this shows is in the fintech space as well. So very attached to traditional ways of doing things.
So can you name one Japanese fintech company? I can think of one.
Yeah. Outside, before this article, no.
The only one that I can think of is one that's actually on the Warriors jersey. Rakuten, I think, is how you pronounce it. And that's sort
oh,
of the,
yeah, right.
That's the
right.
only one. But aside from that, it's all sort of a black hole for me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they have offices in Silicon Valley. They're out there. That's true. Are they a fintech or they're more like a...
E-commerce.
E-commerce, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, but not as many as you would expect. If this was 1988, you would think that all the signs in California would be Japanese by now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it didn't turn out to be the case. And a lot of the banks that they mentioned in this article, they're really concerned with the regional banks, which are their profits have been declining for the past 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Precipitously. And some of that has to do with the population decline.
Sure.
Because they're serving outlying areas. They're not like the Mizuho's or the Mitsui, like the big banks that are in the big cities and international. So the government is trying to get these regional banks to be more digital friendly, but they're kind of resisting. They don't see like the quick payoff. Well, I shouldn't say they're looking for a quick payoff, but they don't see the returns.
The ROI is just not there.
On like this longer term investment. So they may be maybe looking at it a little bit too short term or kind of entrenched, as we're saying, in the current ways of doing things. There has been some effort. There's an effort called Money Forward to get traditional banks and fintech started and being more interoperable so that they can offer more services, just like, you know, everywhere else in the world.
Right.
But it's been a little bit slow. They said just 25 of 59 eligible fintech companies have signed on.
25 of 59.
25 of 59.
So 40
eligible
percent,
ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And only 57 of 130 lenders that they've tried to sign on had any one-on-one agreements. So, just the opposite of like the open banking and the like the PSD2 kind of efforts in Europe. We're seeing a lot of innovation coming because of that. And then, you know, the inverse is true in Japan. We're just not seeing that. There's so many barriers to it looks like from these kind of walls that are built up. And they mentioned that the traditional banks seem to have a fortress mentality. They just want to protect their own domain.
Just keep on keeping on and don't rock the boat. And yeah.
But yeah, the Japanese Bankers Association Chairman Makoto Takashima said at a briefing in December, there could be cases where banks don't see benefits and can't even cover the cost of maintaining systems. So they're looking at a very a short-term kind of return, not like this broad, this is an investment, it's going to cost.
But this is the 10-year plan.
I'm going to get the clients to use, or it's for the client's benefit, and I need to protect, you know, or expand aggressively or anything like that.
Sure.
So, it's a very kind of staid, just keep what you have kind of system. They also mentioned that some of the fintechs are short-staffed. There's just a little bit more of a risk-averse attitude for employees as well to take a flyer on a fintech rather than going with the more secure, traditionally prestigious,
safe,
two-button suit job. A friend of mine who lived in Japan, he tried to sell his suit. It had three buttons in it. And nobody would buy it because they said you only wear suits with two buttons in the jacket. So they're making some efforts, like I said, with Money Forward, and there are some fintechs, and they're just having more trouble getting traction than in other places. So hopefully they'll loosen up a little bit enough to get some more of the business.
So they're getting left behind.
Yeah, actually the other article I have is kind of the kinds of things that they should be doing. And this article talks about what we can expect out of fintechs in the next decade.
Ooh.
And it's kind of interesting because it brings together a lot of ideas and kind of organizes our thinking. I mean, we've talked about like open data and APIs and things like that. So it kind of lays those out into what those trends will look like, what things will look like when those trends evolve more and more. Just a quick breakdown is be portable and interoperable. We've talked about that.
Meaning what?
Just like with the data, being able to, being able to use your data at one bank and maybe just transfer it to another provider.
Makes sense.
And then portable on mobile phones, being mobile friendly. So just like you switch carriers on your mobile phones, we've used this example before, transferring your data to another provider.
So basically,
that will become something that develops over the next decade.
So that if you use, say, a PFM or something like a Mint, which you shouldn't be using that anyway, but if you use a Mint, sort of using that data to inform the next app that you download.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's some efforts towards that.
Makes sense.
Why is Mint not why shouldn't you be using Mint?
It's just the product hasn't really seen a lot of innovation lately. It's just sort of stagnant. There's a lot of other players doing much better things with your data. Mint is also part of Intuit, which is really a not very customer friendly company, I think. I'm doing my best to not use any Intuit products.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I just spent a fortune on the tax software.
That's exactly right.
They really piecemealed me to pieces because I have some business stuff. So I had to buy a separate partnership. That was $50, and then a separate state one, and that was another. So they got me pretty good.
They got in trouble for basically hiding their free file form on their website and really
funneling.
This is recently, yeah. So they're actually funneling customers for their paid products, even though they should
even
by law.
They don't need it.
They don't need it. And by law, they should offer this free file stuff. So anyway, not a big fan of Intuit and I guess by association of Mint. Sorry, Mint.
Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, if you didn't buy from a company that had some sketchy issue before, you'd be carving your own car.
Everybody makes mistakes, but we can also make decisions. And my decision is to not give Intuit any of my money.
All right, so that's the deal with Mint.
That's the deal with Mint, yes.
So, so portable and interoperable, becoming more ubiquitous and accessible, and we'll get into that in just a bit and what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And fintech kind of moving into the background of other applications, of being not something that you download separately, but as you're looking for a mattress or something like that, it just becomes part of the experience.
This actually makes sense in the context of companies even there don't even work in finance, like Instagram. I was reading how there's a really interesting profile of the new head of Instagram in the Times from this weekend, and he was saying that their new play basically will be, how do we facilitate e-commerce? And there's a lot of fintech stuff in that as well. So how do we make it so that you can buy all the crappy jeans you see on Instagram instantaneously via whatever platform
with
you use.
With a microloan,
like an Affirm loan,
sure,
or Klarna or some other thing, or just a way for them to link, have your credit card stored in files so they can buy stuff directly.
Yeah. So it gets kind of woven into the fabric
of
the transaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you might not know who the biggest fintechs are. It might be like Stripe and that kind of thing. That's that kind of a background powerhouse, but you're not seeing it. You're just going to Instagram and doing what you do.
Yeah, it's the same way in which most of us have used Stripe or Shopify, but don't even know it because they just sort of power these companies to do this stuff.
What's Shopify?
So Shopify will enable
it's essentially in the background for the e-commerce, for the online store.
Yeah, yeah. And Stripe will just be the payment rail basically for stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. And the fourth thing they mention here is centralize into a few places and then just steer on autopilot. All right, now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating way that Steve is going to tell it to us.
My number is not really, it's more depressing than fascinating.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's not really a number.
It's not really a number.
It's
no.
Like an integer.
It's, yeah. Kind of,
it's
yeah.
An imaginary number.
It's an imaginary number, yeah. No, my number is actually 8, which is the number of companies that have left the Calibra Association, or the Libra Association, rather. So Libra, as you may know, is the cryptocurrency that Facebook was looking to launch with a bunch of industry partners in the U.S. and abroad to kind of bypass the world economic system. Sure, that's one thing. But as of this week, we learned that Vodafone, the multinational, I think UK-based telecom company, is no longer in Libra. Yeah. So Vodafone has joined companies to the likes of MasterCard, PayPal, Visa.
Don't say Visa.
Stripe. I know, not Visa, and eBay. So essentially other big players are
That's pretty much everybody. That's
yeah.
Like kind of the back end of payment processing. And
it
then
is.
Plaid's out of it, then by definition.
By definition, it's all out. Yeah, yeah.
If Visa's out.
Yeah, so eight is not great. Eight is not great.
Yeah, huh. So is Facebook still, have they announced any changes to their plans?
I think somebody
put
launched,
what if
release.
There's a launch and nobody came?
Yeah, I think they had a press release saying that essentially they've built a system to be so resilient to these changes that they can still move forward without having all these players on board. But
that's a PR wording
such a
dream.
PR. That's
you know, I just had to realign my residence into the local jail, but yeah. I will continue to
serve my duties. They basically say they can still launch this without having all these players on board, but I'm highly skeptical, to say the least.
To say the least.
Yeah.
I mean, if skeptical is the least, then that's pretty...
Yeah.
It doesn't look very good.
Not at all.
You know what? I hate to see the big guys lose like this. You know, poor billionaire Mark Zuckerberg.
He's
not going to dominate the financial system as well.
Not anymore.
It's
yeah.
a tough life.
Yeah. What's your final bite, John?
Yeah, thanks for asking.
Sure.
Mine is actually going to break precedent. I'm going to go with a triple number final bite.
Ooh, a triple final bite.
Yep. We're on the cutting edge here.
Love it.
So it's a 310. And this is the kind of loan that my bank, Alibaba's way of doing micro lending, of which they have 16 million customers, just a few.
That's a piddling number, by the way.
Yeah. So these loans are ones that can be done in 3 minutes to apply, 1 second to approve, and zero humans involved.
So it's 310 is your number?
310 is my number.
Wow.
Yep.
That's incredible. So that you can essentially complete that. How big is a microloan, by the way, in this context in China?
Well, small purchases, anything like, I would guess, anything
like
less than $100
$100
or something
or less.
Like
Yeah. It seems like a fairly small number given just the size and scale of both the Chinese fintech economy.
Well, this
and
is just
the
Alibaba My Bank product. I mean, they still have the Alipay products and
it's still an Alibaba product, which has a lot of reach. So, you know, it's an impressive metric. I love the sort of mnemonic thing like 669 or whatever that number is.
Is it 996 or?
996, yeah.
9 in the morning till 9 at night,
six days a week. Yeah. It still seems like
an
impressive
mnemonic. Yeah, I do love these. That's why I picked this one, actually.
It's
I like these
fun.
Number mnemonics.
It's fun and I love the underwriting that's so quickly, but I'm just not all that impressed with the actual.
Why does it take so long to approve it? 1 second. It's probably 0.8 or something.
It's probably 0.8, yeah. But I mean, they also have all your data because they have access to the social.
Well, that's another thing. One of these big issues that's going on that I've been seeing about is the massive debt that's in China. You know, that may be bringing down the house. Every country that's developed into a size has ended up having some kind of banking collapse. So.
Oh, fascinating.
You know, everybody. We all make mistakes, and we all get carried away with growth that's going to last forever at the same rate. And so I wonder if that's going to happen with...
It likely will.
Or how it will happen. Because there's already a lot of... you can't borrow that again.
Yeah.
And keep things going, yeah.
I think it's how, not when or why.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I am impressed at the way they're able to do these loans like this. We're just talking about how to get these things integrated into other products and everything, and it would be something like this, where it's just just 3 minutes to apply, and then you just get your answer right away, and you go along with your life, and you don't really think about it. You know, massive big data processing and machine learning, and well, especially in China where there's much less privacy restrictions.
Sure.
They probably know all about you already anyway.
They have your social credit score. They know who you are. They know where you are.
They knew how much they're going to lend to you before you applied.
Before you even applied, yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Great number, John. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe if you want to keep up with the latest in FinTech news, and thanks for listening.
Bye for now.